Chapter 15. The Unbreakable Vow. Snow was swirling against the icy windows once more. Christmas was approaching fast. Hagrid had already single-handedly delivered the usual 12 Christmas trees for the Great Hall. Garlands of holly and tinsel had been twisted around the banisters of the stairs. Everlasting candles glowed from inside the helmets of suits of armour, and great bunches of mistletoe had been hung at intervals along the corridors. Large groups of girls tended to converge underneath the mistletoe bunches every time Harry went past, which caused blockages in the corridors. Fortunately, however, Harry's frequent nighttime wanderings had given him an unusually good knowledge of the castle's secret passageways, so that he was able, without too much difficulty, to navigate mistletoe-free routes between classes. Ron, who might once have found the necessity of these detours a cause for jealousy rather than hilarity, simply roared with laughter about it all. Although Harry much preferred this new, laughing, joking Ron to the moody, aggressive model he had been enduring for the last few weeks, the improved Ron came at a heavy price. Firstly, Harry had to put up with the frequent presence of Lavender Brown, who seemed to regard any moment that she was not kissing Ron as a moment wasted. And secondly, Harry found himself once more the best friend of two people who seemed unlikely ever to speak to each other again. Ron, whose hands and forearms still bore scratches and cuts from Hermione's bird attack, was taking a defensive and resentful tone. "She can't complain," he told Harry. "She's snogged Crumb, so she's found out someone wants to snog me, too. Well, it's a free country. I haven't done anything wrong." Harry did not answer, but pretended to be absorbed in the book they were supposed to have read before charms next morning. Quintessence, a Quest. Determined as he was to remain friends with both Ron and Hermione, he was spending a lot of time with his mouth shut tight. "I never promised Hermione anything," Ron mumbled. "I mean, all right. I was going to go to Slughorn's Christmas party with her, but she never said, 'Just as friends. I'm a free agent.'" Harry turned a page of Quintessence, aware that Ron was watching him. Ron's voice tailed away in mutters, barely audible over the loud crackling of the fire, though Harry thought he caught the words, "Crumb," and "Can't complain," again. Hermione's schedule was so full that Harry could only talk to her properly in the evenings, when Ron was, in any case, so tightly wrapped around Lavender that he did not notice what Harry was doing. Hermione refused to sit in the common room while Ron was there, so Harry generally joined her in the library, which meant that their conversations were held in whispers.
"He's at perfect liberty to kiss whomever he likes,"
said Hermione, while the librarian, Madame Pince, prowled the shelves behind them.
"I really couldn't care less."
She raised her quill and dotted an I so ferociously that she punctured a hole in her parchment. Harry said nothing. He thought his voice might soon vanish from lack of use. He bent a little lower over advanced potion-making and continued to make notes on everlasting elixirs, occasionally pausing to decipher the prince's useful additions to Libatius Borage's text.
"And, incidentally," said Hermione after a few moments, "you need to be careful." "For the last time," said Harry, speaking in a slightly hoarse whisper after three quarters of an hour of silence, "I am not giving back this book. I've learnt more from the Half-Blood Prince than Snape or Slughorn have taught me in—"
"I'm not talking about your stupid so-called prince,"
said Hermione, giving his book a nasty look as though it had been rude to her.
"I'm talking about earlier. I went into the girls' bathroom just before I came in here, and there were about a dozen girls in there, including that Romilda Vane, trying to decide how to slip you a love potion. They're all hoping they're going to get you to take them to Slughorn's party, and they all seem to have bought Fred and George's love potions, which I'm afraid to say probably work."
"Why didn't you confiscate them then?" demanded Harry. It seemed extraordinary that Hermione's mania for upholding rules could have abandoned her at this crucial juncture.
"They didn't have the potions with them in the bathroom," said Hermione scornfully. "They were just discussing tactics, as I doubt whether even the Half-Blood Prince,"
she gave the book another nasty look,
"could dream up an antidote for a dozen different love potions at once. I'd just invite someone to go with you. That'll stop all the others thinking they've still got a chance. It's tomorrow night. They're getting desperate.
There isn't anyone I want to invite, mumbled Harry, who was still trying not to think about Ginny any more than he could help, despite the fact that she kept cropping up in his dreams in ways that made him devoutly thankful that Ron could not perform legilimency.
Well, just be careful what you drink, because Romilda Vane looked like she meant business, said Hermione grimly.
She hitched up the long roll of parchment on which she was writing her arithmancy essay and continued to scratch away with her quill. Harry watched her with his mind a long way away.
Hang on a moment, he said slowly. I thought Filch had banned anything brought at Weasley's Wizard Wheezes. And when has anyone ever paid attention to what Filch has banned? Asked Hermione, still concentrating on her essay.
But I thought all the owls were being searched. So how come these girls are able to bring love potions into school?
Fred and George send them disguised as perfumes and cough potions, said Hermione. It's part of their owl order service.
You know a lot about it. Hermione gave him the kind of nasty look she had just given his copy of Advanced Potion Making.
It was all on the back of the bottles they showed Ginny and me in the summer, she said coldly. I don't go around putting potions in people's drinks, or pretending to either, which is just as bad.
Yeah, well, never mind that, said Harry quickly. The point is, Filch is being fooled, isn't he? These girls are getting stuff into the school disguised as something else. So why couldn't Malfoy have brought the necklace into the school?
Oh, Harry, not that again.
Come on! Why not? Demanded Harry.
Look, sighed Hermione. Secrecy sensors detect jinxes, curses, and concealment charms, don't they? They're used to find dark magic and dark objects. They'd have picked up a powerful curse, like the one on that necklace, within seconds, but something that's just been put in the wrong bottle wouldn't register. And anyway, love potions aren't dark or dangerous.
Easy for you to say, muttered Harry, thinking of Romilda Vane.
So it would be down to Filch to realize it wasn't a cough potion, and he's not a very good wizard. I doubt he can tell one potion from...
Hermione stopped dead. Harry had heard it too. Somebody had moved close behind them among the dark bookshelves. They waited. And a moment later, the vulture-like countenance of Madame Pince appeared around the corner, her sunken cheeks, her skin like parchment, and her long hooked nose illuminated unflatteringly by the lamp she was carrying.
The library is now closed, she said. Mind you return anything you have borrowed to the correct. What have you been doing to that book, you depraved boy?
It isn't the library's, it's mine, said Harry hastily, snatching his copy of Advanced Potion Making off the table as she lunged at it with a claw-like hand.
Despoiled, she hissed. Desecrated. Befouled.